What's up, everyone, and welcome back to Hot Take, where I, along with my co-hosts Nat and Lawrence, give you our hottest takes on all things NBA. But today, we're going to take a little break from the typical stuff that we normally do. We're going to switch it up. We mentioned this on the last podcast. We're actually going to be talking about the Netflix special, Untold, Malice at the Palace.
Mm-hmm.
So for people who don't know, maybe people that are too young, people who haven't seen the Netflix special yet, this is, at least to me, in my time, being an NBA fan, arguably one of the most, I don't know how to describe it. Unique. It literally changed the NBA for at least a decade.
Yeah.
When I first heard that this special came out, you're the one who told me about it. You're like, yo, when you first saw the Netflix special, what were your thoughts?
Well, all right. So just to say this from the beginning, I didn't know much about the Malice at the Palace, you know, before watching the special. Like, obviously, I've heard of the event. I've heard who was in it, what happened. But I didn't understand, like, how it affected the players, how the NBA handled it afterwards. Like, that was what the special told me about, informed me about. But the whole thing was just amazing. Like, I enjoyed watching the whole thing. I loved the commentary by Reggie Miller, especially. Like, he was good in the special. I love Steven Jackson. He was pissed off, and B, he was funny while being pissed off talking about it, which is like, you know, it was pretty entertaining. But the whole thing was just very informative from beginning to end, and I really enjoyed it. But obviously, you were old enough, because I was pretty young at the time. You were old enough to live through it and experience it with your friends. But for me, like, this was like me experiencing it for the first time with an actual like understanding of basketball. Cause I was like only like 4 or 5 at the time. You know, I only like, you know about it basically. So it was good to see it now as a grown adult and like knowing basketball, knowing the NBA, knowing these players, to actually see what transpired. And it was crazy. I really enjoyed it.
That's actually like how I wanted to start, was asking you, you know, November 19th, 2004, like, where was Nathaniel Berberabe? What were you doing?
Honestly, I couldn't even tell you. I don't know. I don't know that. I could not tell you where I was that far, that long ago.
But so you were probably like 6 years old.
5 or 6.
Probably like first grade.
Yeah.
You know, kindergarten, first grade.
Mm-hmm. Learning how to write
all
cursive.
All you care about is, you know, drawing on the sidewalk with some chalk.
Yep.
You know, learning ABCs,
playing dodgeball,
1, 2, 3s.
Yep.
There you go.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, for me, for my aspect, like, this is, let's see, my 5th month being in the United States. I just moved here from Japan. I was already an avid basketball fan, you know, prior to that. I know the history of the Indiana Pacers. I knew all about Reggie Miller. You know, 2003. The champions were the San Antonio Spurs, you know, and the season, like, I had known the buildup of the Pacers from when they acquired Jermaine O'Neal, when they acquired Ron Artest, when they acquired Steven Jackson, you know, for that season. And it's like, being a basketball fan, you see the buildup coming. I saw when Jermaine O'Neal won Most Improved Player. I saw when he made his first All-Star. I knew that he was going to be arguably one of the greatest players in the league. And to hear their side of the story of what happened, for people who don't know what happened, the short version is Ron Artest, who was known throughout his whole career to be a hothead, had a hard foul on Ben Wallace. Ben Wallace got upset, shoved Ron Artest. Ron Artest then proceeds to lay down on the scorer's table, which a lot of people thought was disrespectful. A couple minutes after the shove, refs trying to break people up, you know, players gathering on the court. All of a sudden, you see a cup of beer land on Ron Artest's, like, chest area. And he shoots straight up and charges into the stands. Him and Steven Jackson just started wailing on people. I remember vividly, like, the images on ESPN of Jermaine O'Neal doing, like, a running punch to some dude that ran up onto the court. And, like, I'm watching this happen, and I'm watching, like, the news cycles after it. And, like, this was, like, the biggest news for, like, a solid month. Because it was – you hear it throughout the course of the special, where it's, like, it was unprecedented. Nothing like this had ever happened before. Yes, there were fights on the court. Yes, there were punches thrown. Benches clear, the whole nine yards. But for somebody to go out into the stands and literally fight fans, like, that was unheard of. And I remember watching that game because it was the end of the game. Like,
so,
you know, I'm getting ready
to
go.
So you were like there real time. You're watching the game real time.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
So I'm like, I'm watching the game and I'm just watching all this happen. I'm like, what on earth is going on? Like, it's just wild, you know? Never seen anything like that before. Now, for you, from your perspective, you said that you heard about it, right? Mm-hmm. You never really seen it, whatever the case was.
Yeah.
What exactly did you hear about it? What side were you told?
I mean, honestly, like, in the simplest terms, I just heard that a player got into it with the fans. Like, I didn't hear, like, the extras about it, like, who started the fight or what transpired before that. I just heard that a player and a fan got into it. And obviously, like, I've seen it, like, always on social media for the anniversaries of that, you know, November, was it 4th? 19th? Yeah. Something like that.
Not 19th.
Like, 19th. So every year I would see the highlights. I would see, like, the video footage. But I think we needed to address a couple of things first before we go on. It happened in garbage time in that game, didn't it? I think the Pacers were already up like a good amount.
Double digits. Fourth quarter,
yeah. Double digits. So like there didn't need to be, you know, their starters, you know, Jackson, Artest, all them on the court. They just wanted to just rub it in because of their rivalry from the season before, right? Like they had it out for each other. The season before, the Pistons went on to go to the conference final, the finals. I forget the conference finals.
I think it was conference finals.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So like there was just bad blood from the start, and like you know, like in the documentary, they were hyping it up like this was like our statement game for the new season. Like we were trying to like show them that we were the best in the East and all that stuff, and then like this happens, and also. That throw was immaculate. Like, obviously, it changed everyone's lives, but that throw was on point. It landed right on his chest from, like, at least, like, 10 rows behind.
That like, guy that has to be, like, a former, like, cornhole champion or something like that with accuracy like that, bro.
I was like, wow. Like, and in the documentary, like, it was in slow motion, too, and you could just see it, like, just flying through the air. And then you see Artest just, like, charge the stands. But like I just heard like very general stuff about it. I didn't hear an actual like details, and thank God I saw this because it gave me all the details I needed. And the players too. The players all like you know gave their own like version of it, you know, from their perspective, and it was interesting.
So for me, this is where I'm going to kind of take over a little bit, and then I'll get your perspective on it because, again, you're watching it through the lens of now you're able to see the player side. You didn't really know. Like how it started, like the original video and footage and stuff, the whole original story. Now you're seeing the player side. Now I have perception of both sides. And what's interesting about the documentary is how they tie those two together. And that's what blew my mind. Because on one end,
what were your initial thoughts about the whole thing? Because obviously you saw it, but like, what was your initial reaction to everything that happened that night?
So this is what I was getting to was like, now that I know both sides, now that I see, you know, both ends of the spectrum, I see how at that time, how my mind was formed and how I was, you know, basically skewed to think.
Yeah.
And now like you see the other side and now your mind is open. Like it's kind of like it's really interesting for me because when you watch the documentary, especially you, your first time actually seeing like the footage and stuff, the news, you know, bits on it. That was normal in the early 2000s because what a lot of people don't realize is hoop culture, you know, rap culture, the whole nine yards, like that was kind of taboo in the early 2000s. You're coming from an era where you have Michael Jordan, Shaquille O'Neal, Reggie Miller, these guys who are dressing up in suits. Like we saw the Michael Jordan documentary, you know, the way he would roll up into games and stuff like that is very professional. You're an athlete. Yeah. This is what you get paid to do. This is how you act. And then you see that culture change, especially when you have like Fab Five coming into the NBA, and then the emergence of Allen Iverson changing the whole culture with the tats and the mm-hmm. braids, the cornrows. Like, all of a sudden, the NBA started to shift, and there was a negative light shown on it because Michael's not in the NBA anymore. You know, Reggie Miller's like the last of a dying breed, so to speak. And for guys who look like Allen Iverson to be playing in the NBA, to dress like how Allen Iverson was playing, there was always like murmurs of, oh, you know, these guys are too thug. These guys are too hood. You know, like, they're going to ruin the NBA. Like, it's going to turn into, you know, street ball, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly how the media perceived it when this brawl first happened. They were labeled thugs. They were labeled hoodlums. You know, they were labeled like all these different things, not because of their personalities or the people that they were, but mainly because of the way they looked. You could say it's because of their actions, but let's be real here. It was about the way that they looked.
Yeah.
Because if you, any person, you take any person who, if they feel threatened, if they feel like their life is threatened, you have fight or flight. Most times you're going to fight. A lot of these players, that's what they were experiencing, was fight or flight. Mm-hmm. You can make the argument like, oh, you know, you're supposed to be professional, the whole nine yards. You can't say that until you put yourself in that situation where you're in the heat of a battle. You're trying to prove to this other team that you're the dominant team. You're in a hostile environment. We all heard stories about fans, especially over the last 5 years, how brutal fans can be with the things that they say. And you see now how the NBA is on the side of the players mm-hmm. by removing these fans who are unruly, by dismissing banning them from games, no longer season ticket holders. Whereas in the early 2000s, it was about money. It was all about business. And fans contribute to your business.
Yeah.
So at the time, I'm not saying like this is David Stern's like mentality, but you know, I could only imagine the position he was in. But the way the media perceived everything to be was like, these guys are bad guys. They're guys from the streets, people who are going to ruin the NBA. And it was so unfair. And I didn't realize it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're young like that, you hear the murmurs coming up of how the NBA is changing and the face is changing. And you see like, oh, you know, this person is like this. And like, you hear Ron Artest's story and how he's so disruptive. And, you know, it's all about rap and like NBA players getting into rap and dropping rap albums. So like the NBA was really changing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it really was. And then to hear and relive and reflect on like, newscasters being like, oh, they're thugs, you know, they're hoodlums, they don't deserve to be in the NBA, you know, all mm-hmm. this other stuff. It was so unfair. Nobody knew Ron Artest's story. Nobody knew that he grew up in the hood and he fought his way out of the hood, you know, Coney Island, to make it to the NBA. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, everybody kind of knew that he had mental problems, but nobody really knew that he had mental problems. You know what I mean? Right, like, people just thought he was like disturbed, like he was just a troubled youth, like just rebellious. But like, he really had, he alluded to it in the documentary. Like, he had to see a therapist. Back then, that was taboo.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, you're not supposed to be a professional athlete with stuff like that in the NBA. Nowadays, it's more commonplace. There's even advocates, players who are advocates for seeking mental health. Players who are open about their mental health. Paul George, for example.
Kevin Love,
for example. Even NFL players. You know, it's a big thing. You know, Dak Prescott. Guys like this who they're really advocating for, you know, getting mental help.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, Ron Artest, when you think about it, when you're watching the documentary, he was literally by himself because it was unprecedented. Like, nobody had gone through that before, really.
Yeah.
Or they weren't as vocal about it or showed it as profoundly as Ron Artest did, because you knew like there was stuff going on up there where it's like he's not 100% there,
because
mm-hmm. you know, the way he would act, like, you know, you see the footage of him putting like Kobe in a headlock and like
right
all these other things, and of course obviously the brawl, you know, Malice in the Palace.
And then what bothers me too is that the players didn't get to tell their side of the story. Like, they had to just be quiet about it and then let the NBA handle it through David Stern. The media just, you know, basically spoke for them and didn't really speak right about them by calling them thugs. You know, I think they had that narrative all this time. And then the brawl happened, and that truly like propelled it all the way at the start.
They're like, oh, see, we're right. We can say it now. They're thugs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, that was the, that's the other part where like, I never thought about, or I never realized, like, we really never heard their side of the story. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't even know Jermaine O'Neal's, like, his upbringing, his story. Like, I knew about Jermaine O'Neal because like, he was one of the few players to make it from high school to the NBA. And he wasn't very, very highly touted. Like, I mean, he talked about it in the documentary where like, his first few seasons with the, they called him the Jailblazers at the time. You know, he's playing with guys like Zach Randolph, Rasheed Wallace, like these like big name guys. You know, I think Stromile Swift was on there, or Darius Miles, one or the other. And these guys who, like he mentioned in his, in the documentary, like guys that play the same position as him. So he's all the way, like he's like fourth string. You know, he's like fourth backup for his position.
Yeah.
And I remember when he made the jump to Indiana, and it was like, wait, hold on, wait a second. Who is this guy? And that's when you started to pay attention to him. Cause like, yo, this guy's kind of clean. Like, who is this? And when I'm watching like these highlights of Jermaine O'Neal, it's like he was Chris Bosh before Chris Bosh came along. You know, big man who can shoot from outside, who has the crazy handles and can penetrate to the cup. You know, that's somebody who at the time for the NBA was, you never saw that before. That was considered a unicorn. You know, the stuff Jermaine O'Neal was doing. And that's what made him exciting. That's why, you know, when he made his first All-Star appearance, when he won Most Improved, I wasn't even a Pacers fan, but like, you're hyped for him because you never see stuff like this before.
Yeah.
You know, and then like with, you know, with Steven Jackson's perspective, it was interesting too, because he just came off of winning a championship. And I never realized what his mentality was as a player. And you see it in the documentary where Steven Jackson is like, he is loyal, like absolutely loyal.
Ride or die.
And he's like, you're ride or die, like to the end. Like, and as you don't know that, you know, when the brawl is going on, you don't realize that. You just think he's going berserk and he wants to fight too. That's how the media perceived it.
Definitely.
That's how the media seemed, like he just wanted to fight somebody. But when you hear his side, like, that's your brother. Like, you're going to, like, if you're, you have siblings, if you see somebody jump at your siblings, what are you going to do? You're going to jump in. You're going to try to help them.
Hell yeah.
You know? And I think that's what Steven Jackson's mentality was. And for it to be perceived as, you know, he's a thug, he's this, he's that. And then, like, the footage of him afterwards saying, like, you know, till that's we die.
Brother.
You know,
yeah. Do you know what's, you know, what's crazy too? Like watching it back, when the guy throws the beer and Ron Artest goes after him, they go after the wrong guy, right?
Yes, that's what.
Like, the guy is like chilling back and like letting Ron just charge at the guy next to him, and he's actually holding him back. Yep. Like I think his name is John. Is it John Green? I forget the
Green. Yeah.
Like the guy is in a blue cap, and he's like, he's just holding holding Ron Artest. I was like, what? Because I always thought that the guy who threw it was the guy that Ron charged at. But it turns out it was the guy who was holding Ron back, which is pretty wild to me.
Let me tell you, for like the first, I don't know how many days or weeks, everybody thought that the guy Ron Artest charged was the guy who threw it. Mm-hmm. The guy was like a scrawny little like dude, you know, like he was wearing glasses. Like he didn't look intimidating whatsoever. Yeah. And to have this like 6'8", you know, small chiseled, forward come like charging at you.
Yeah.
And then when it came out that it was the other guy who threw the cup, it was just like insult to injury for Ron Artest, because he went after the wrong dude.
Yeah.
So now like he's getting in trouble for not only starting the fight, but now he attacked the wrong person. And then like I think the dude who actually threw the cup, like I'm glad he was banned. I'm glad he got like the sentence that he got. Like there's no place.
I'm glad
for
they
that.
Found him too, because in the like they were saying that it was hard to track down or trace down who this guy was because of like the footage and all that stuff. But glad they found him.
Right. It was crazy. The other thing that the image that stood out to me watching this play back was how disrespectful people are of other human beings. Because when the Pacers were heading back to the locker room after the brawl.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
You see people pouring beer, throwing popcorn, throwing chairs, spitting, dumping all kinds of liquids and solids and all this other stuff. Too, right? I'm like, yeah, they threw a couple of chairs. The person that threw the chair got caught. And I'm just like, you're treating these players as if they're animals at a zoo where you could just throw things at them. You know what I mean? Like, that was hard for me to watch. And like, I can only imagine what's going through like Jermaine O'Neal's mind where he's getting like beer poured on him and popcorn thrown at him. Like, I would get riled up too. Like,
yeah,
I'm a human being. Like, you can't treat me this way.
It's crazy.
Absolutely wild. Absolutely wild. Like, for the other thing I wanted to talk about too was what was hard about this, and you kind of alluded, like, you saw it in the documentary, but a lot of people who didn't live it, a lot of people who didn't witness it, I know for a fact the Pacers were going to win that year. 100%.
Really?
100%. Not a shadow of a doubt. They were going to win that year. That team was so good.
That alone makes the story even worse, man. Because obviously you wanted Reggie to win. Like, I was sympathizing for Reggie Miller, like, throughout the whole thing. I was like, man, if only he got that ring. You know, he was close. And you saw it like in his face too during the documentary. Like, he was sad about, like, he was just sad. Like, he was, you know, acting that way. It was crazy.
Let me put it to you this way. I'm going to try to recall as best I can. I might get some of this wrong, but like, think about the NBA today. What are some things that you look for on a good NBA team? Like, what are some of the things that you hear all the time that compose and comprise a great NBA team?
Definitely. Shooting. Well, now it's shooting.
Shooting. You had Reggie Miller.
Rebounding.
You had Jermaine O'Neal and Ron Artest.
And defense.
Yeah, Ron Artest and you have Steven Jackson.
Yep. Those are like defense. Top three for me. Yeah, top three of those two. Yeah.
Jermaine O'Neal was an underrated rim protector. He would swat everything that got near the rim.
Yeah.
The other big thing about the NBA today is you need a solid point guard. Pacers had Jamal Tinsley, arguably the one who caused, you know, the malice at the Palace by egging Ron Artest to hard foul Ben Wallace, which led to the shove, which led to the beer being thrown at him. But like, that team was built for success. They blew out the eventual, you know, NBA champions, the Pistons. The Pistons went on to win that year.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, they just won. Was it that they just won?
I think they had just won.
They won 2004.
Mm-hmm.
They had just won.
I think so.
And so, like, I truly believe that, because it was the Spurs who won in 2005. I really think the Pacers would have matched up well against the Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
100%.
Damn, just heartbreaking.
And I think that's what makes it, yeah. Because, like, think about it today, like, in today's NBA, you always hear it all the time. Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook. Who else is there aside from those two? Carmelo Anthony, you know, guys like Derrick Rose, guys that you really want to win an NBA championship. And Reggie Miller, as long as he played in the NBA, he was right there. He was right there twice.
Yeah.
Because at one time he made it to the NBA finals. And then here he is, like, the team was nasty, bro. Like, it was only a month into the season. But the way that they played, it was so ridiculous. And then that particular game, I remember watching that particular game. Their defense was turned up like four notches. And mind you, they're in the Palace. The Palace was no joke. It's kind of like MSG, you know, Boston Garden. It had like those kind of vibes to it.
Yeah.
That's how the Palace was. And for them to be blowing out the Pistons, the defending champions, that badly, that was something to see. And you just knew. You're like, yeah, this team is legit. This team is legit.
That hurts to hear, man. That hurts.
Yeah. It really does. And then, like, you go on to witness that Reggie Miller never wins that championship. Jermaine O'Neal, not too long after that, you know, he had probably like another three good seasons.
Yeah.
And then he started to fizzle out. And then What
kind of hurts me is that Ron Artest leaves the Pacers after the Palace joins the Lakers, right?
Yeah.
I was like, man, that's kind of messed up.
Right? No, he didn't join the Lakers.
Oh, I'm sorry. Where did he join? Well, he changed his name,
I think,
right?
After the Pacers, I think I can't remember exactly where he went, but I know he did a stint in Houston. He was in Houston for a minute.
Mm.
That's where him and Kobe got into a fight. And then after his stint in Houston, he got picked up by the Lakers.
Gotcha.
And which is wild because it's like, yo, Kobe and Ron, they have this bad blood. How are they going to work as teammates? You know what I mean? That was 2009.
Yeah.
When he joined the Lakers and they won their championship.
But like him just leaving the Pacers after that was just like, yes. I mean, you kind of get it because of his mental health and like he didn't want to stay in that environment. But then it's also like Jermaine O'Neal, Steven Jackson kind of like set up for him. And then he just leaves. It's like, you know.
And I don't think that was discussed amongst them. So it was kind of like, yo, like that's messed up, bro. Like we did all this for you.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, like you understand Ron Artest's situation because he's trying to get out of that environment. He doesn't want that held over the team, you know, for the next 2-3 years.
Right.
You know, he wants to squash it, which I understood and like I respected. It was really hard for me because even though I wasn't a Pacers fan, I was a big fan of Jermaine O'Neal.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that when Miami picked up Jermaine O'Neal, you know, towards the end of his career, I was hyped. I was like, yo, we got Jermaine O'Neal. Like, it's a wrap. Like, we got this. I mean, he didn't play too well, but, you know, we dropped one O'Neal and got a different O'Neal.
Hey.
But it was definitely, you know, for people who didn't see it, I highly recommend it. It was a good watch. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, kind of touch on Ron Artest a little bit more, because I saw more of Ron Artest than you have, you know, throughout his playing career. I saw the good side of Ron Artest and I saw the bad side. I've seen sides where Ron Artest could take over a game and hit threes and like, you know, 18 footers like it's nothing. And then lock down the best offensive player on the opposing team, strip them, run them down, dunk it. I've seen it all with Ron Artest.
Yeah.
For you to see Ron Artest in this light, the type of player that he was, on and off the court, you know, what was that like for you? Being able to understand that now.
He's a beast. Like he was determined either way to either, you know, lock down somebody or score. But obviously it's hard to challenge. I'm sorry. Hard to balance that challenge of, you know, your mental health and also playing basketball, you know, and with Ron Artest, obviously he had to lead the Pacers. He goes on to win with the Lakers. Cause for me, I've only seen Ron Artest in, when he changed his name to Meta World Peace, like that. I was like,
exactly.
The one thing that I remember of Ron Artest. And like everyone was like,
and that was like the biggest joke for a while.
It was the biggest joke. Yeah. I was part of it. I was like, world peace. Like, really?
Yeah.
But now I understand more about him through this documentary. Like, I've watched him play, watched him, how he thinks. And like, you could see like when he's being interviewed in the documentary, like he's being honest. Like he's seriously like this is what happened like through my head. Like this is what happened like when I was thinking through my head. And this is what happened as I was going through this and that. And like, he's just trying to think through it. He's just trying to, you know, be the best possible version of himself, even if that wasn't really what the other players wanted or his teammates wanted. And you can see it. And like, I guess like for O'Neal to be mad at him, like I kind of understand it, but that was just Ron being Ron, you know? And I think he gets that too, even though it was ultimately like for the better. So.
Like, it's interesting because like now, like it's kind of norm, like, you have interviews with Russell Westbrook, who's very open, very honest, very, you know, like truth hurts type of thing. Kevin Durant's the same way. LeBron's the same way. You know, they'll say stuff like, that's a stupid question, or like, next question, or like, I don't want to answer that. You know, it's a bad question.
Yeah.
Ron Artest has always been this way, where he literally says what he thinks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what made him such a fascinating player. And I think that's why he was targeted so much throughout his early years of his career, because that was not normal. You kept things in the locker room. You didn't speak your mind. You had to think about the business first. whereas Ron Artest was going against the grain,
for sure.
Which was, like, you see it in the documentary, you kind of appreciate that more, because that kind of, I feel like, led the way for players now. Like, Ron mm-hmm. Artest was kind of that catalyst to be like, it's okay to have mental health issues and to seek help.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay to speak your mind. People are going to hate you one way or the other. People are going to disagree with you. And so, I mean, he even said it at one point where he was like, I wish they interviewed me right after. At least that way they can hear my side and determine he's right, he's wrong. But he didn't have that opportunity.
No one did.
No one did. Exactly.
Yeah.
And like for Steven Jackson, like a lot of people forget how good Steven Jackson was. I hated Steven Jackson because he could defend your best player. He could hit the open three like it's nothing. Like he was wet from beyond the arc. And he just had that personality where like when he's not on your team, you hate to go up against him.
Yeah.
He was one of those players, like a Ron Artest. And then like I feel like throughout the course of the documentary, the person you feel most bad for is Reggie.
Reggie and Jermaine.
You know, like,
not gonna lie.
And Jermaine.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because Reggie retired at the end of that season.
Mm-hmm. Bro, people were crying in the stands. I didn't know that was the case for Reggie, like that night.
Mm-hmm. He is arguably one of the most beloved players to ever play the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have Shea Serrano's book here.
I do too. So here, actually.
Yeah. And who's the foreword written
can't
by?
See it. Can't see it. It's my Reggie Miller right there.
Sorry, my by Reggie Miller.
I backward. My background is not
adapted no,
to the end of it.
It's by Reggie Miller. Shea Serrano is a Spurs fan, and he had Reggie write his foreword. You know what I mean? Like that's the type of impact Reggie had on the game. Love him or hate him, like you love the competitive nature about Reggie Miller because he did it the right way.
Yeah.
Like you know the taunts were like, you know, he's doing like the choke to Spike Lee and like, but you love that. You love that about NBA players.
This too, Yeah.
Him and MJ had some of the craziest battles. Him and the Knicks had some of the craziest battles. Like those were always like the top three teams in the East every year. And even Miami, you know, in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were, man, Reggie was so fun to watch. Like I remember I used to hate playing against Reggie Miller. And I would talk the most smack about Reggie Miller. But, oh, he looks like an alien. He's so skinny. Wow. I can't stand him. Because he's like, you know, like you, that's your enemy. Like you don't want him to win. But then at the end, it's also one of those things where it's like when you hear him in interviews, you see like the things he does off the court. You're like, damn, I really wish Reggie wins. Like I hope he wins a ring. You know, he's one of those players.
Yeah.
And that's who, you know, I think more so than Jermaine, because Jermaine had more time to win a ring. I feel bad for Jermaine because after that season, the team basically got blown up. So everything that they worked hard for.
Yeah, for real.
Like imagine coming into the league, people booing you. You get traded to a team and people are like, oh, this is who we traded, you know, Davis for. And so like, and then all of a sudden molding yourself into being like, you know what? Screw all you guys. I'm going to prove that I'm the best player. And to actually do it. Because there was a time period where he literally was one of the best players.
Mm-hmm.
One of the knocks on Jermaine O'Neal, though, fun fact, is that a lot of people blame Jermaine O'Neal for Michael Jordan not winning another All-Star MVP in 2003.
Good. I'm glad.
They were on the same All-Star team. I think it was like the final minutes or something like that. Jermaine O'Neal fouled somebody when he didn't have to foul somebody, and then the West ended up winning, and it was MJ's last All-Star game. Everybody's so mad at Jermaine O'Neal. Poor Jermaine, man. Poor Jermaine.
Yeah.
And then like it's crazy too, because after the blow up of this team, the Pacers were never the same again until almost 10 years later.
Mm-hmm.
When you had Paul George, you had
Danny Granger.
And like, I know like for people your age, like that Pacers team was nasty going, you know, they had battles against the Miami Heat.
They did. Yeah.
But like, I'm watching that series and I'm like, that 2003, 2004, 2005, like Indiana Pacers team would have dominated this Pacers team. dominated.
I bet.
Yeah. Absolutely destroyed them, man. Absolutely. Roy Hibbert would not stand a chance against Jermaine O'Neal.
I mean, yeah, he was kind of trash, low-key, but...
Reggie would have lit him up. PG wouldn't be able to score with Ron Artest guarding him. Well, oh man, oh, it would have been, and like you see it, you saw some of the footage in the games, like it would be like fourth quarter 59-59.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, like started, there's like 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, it's like 63-67. Like it was, you know, that's how the NBA was in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah,
that's just how it was. What would you rate this documentary?
Definitely a 10 out of 10. It was great storytelling. Just great production. I loved it. How about you?
I agree. 10 out of 10, highly recommend. For people who haven't seen it, go watch it. You know me, I'm a big history person. So I like to relive history. I like to hear history told through the lens of other people. You know what I mean? Like, it's definitely worth it. It's definitely worth watching. The other thing too is, well, the message I got from this is like, it was kind of interesting because it did touch a lot on mental health, and like mental health is really, it does exist.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no problem, you know, props to Ron Artest for being open and honest about like his situation and everything like that.
Also,
is there anything else you wanted to
Yeah, add? Yeah. My favorite part of the documentary was when Steven Jackson goes, "How do you not know Reggie Miller, the Indiana Pacers?" It was so funny because remember the security guard was going to tase him or something. He's going to like,
yeah. Oh man, that was so messed up. That was so messed up. I was like, yo, how you
know Reggie Miller?
He's been like one of the faces of the NBA for the past like 15 years, guy. How do you not know who Reggie is? Out of all the players that cop targeted Reggie.
Yeah. And he was in a suit too. It was like,
like it's not like he's a casual fan. Speaking of fans, before we go, I just want to touch on this. When you watch the documentary, the dude, the guy that got punched.
I forgot his name.
I cannot stand that dude.
They brought him for the documentary. They brought him in.
Yes. Like, what? And the
he thinks that he's in the right still. He thinks that he's in the right. I was like, what?
Guys. That's what I'm saying.
Detroit fans, first of man. All, the Detroit fans.
The dude that threw the beer, you know, he got his just desserts, if you will. I wish Ron Artest realized it was him and went off on him. Never mind. I'm not promoting violence or anything like that. But in the case of the dude who got punched by Jermaine O'Neal, what did you think was going to happen? You went from the stands down to the floor. And stood in front of Ron Artest with your brother. What did you think was going to happen? This is like, there's chaos going around. People are trying to protect themselves. Who in their right mind? Because that guy's probably like 5'6", 5'7", tops.
Yeah.
Who in their right mind is going to be going up to a 6'8" professional athlete to try to throw a punch? Like, are you crazy?
It's funny because like he kind of has this stance. When you see it, you has like punching stance, and he's like, "Oh, he shouldn't have punched me." It's like, "Are you serious? Like, you about to square up?"
He put his hands in the fist, like he was ready. And let me tell you, man, he is so blessed that Jermaine O'Neal is also so blessed that Jermaine slipped while he threw that punch.
Yeah.
Because I think he could have done some serious damage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Jermaine would have been suspended longer. That's the other thing I wanted to touch on, because a lot of people don't know how bad the whole like outcome of the Malice in the Palace was. Ron Artest being suspended for a whole year, that had never been done before, ever.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. A whole year.
Yeah.
Somebody getting suspended for a month. Like, that was already unheard of. So when people are like, Steven Jackson got suspended for a month, like, yo, what the heck? Jermaine O'Neal got 25 games? Like, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. Or like, oh, sorry, Steven was like 30-something games. Jermaine was 25. And then Ron Artest to get a whole year. That's a whole year without pay. That's the thing that a lot of people were talking about.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you get your sentencing, you know, whether it was like you had to pay fines or whatever the case was.
Mm-hmm.
They had to go to court too. Props to the lawyer. Yeah, props to the lawyer who did that, all that investigating, called all the fans, you know, got everybody on video. I could imagine all the interviews they had to do and how long that process took. But
crazy.
Crazy, man. Awesome, awesome documentary. Highly recommend. Go watch it. Go check it out. It's on Netflix. Untold Malice at the Palace.
Yes, sir.
Anything else before we go? Before we sign off?
Yeah, I have one more thing. Happy belated birthday to you, our host. I was gonna say it. All right, I had this whole thing planned. It was your birthday, September 4th. That was what, Saturday, right? Saturday.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. Thank you.
Happy 18th birthday, man.
I appreciate that. Kobe year. Quickly before we go, I just wanted to throw this in there. Do you know who Tim Donahue is?
Tim Donahue. I've heard of him.
The referee that they interviewed for the documentary?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When I tell you that they interviewed him, that absolutely blew my mind. Do you know what happened with Tim Donahue?
No. But
He's banned from the NBA.
He's banned?
He was a referee.
Right.
And he would bet on games that he reffed. He went to jail, bro. He did time. So when I see Tim Donahue, I'm like, what? How did they get this guy? Like, he was willing to talk about this? Yeah. He was reffing that game.
That is wild. Yeah, because like, I did hear that nobody wanted to ref like the Pistons or the Pacers.
Right.
They were together. I was like, oh, shoot, you know.
He probably wanted to because he's probably making money off it. Yeah, I thought that was wild, y'all. I was like, what the heck? Did he serve time? And then like I had to like do some quick research. I'm like, yeah, that is him. Because that was a big story too. Like not like a couple of years after the Malice in the Palace.
That's crazy.
But yeah, fun.
I think it's Scott Foster might be on that too. There. We'll see. With the Chris Paul.
No, I'm just Chris Paul. This is gonna be a Chris Paul documentary. Untold, the ring that was never won. Chris Paul's story. Yeah, I mean that does it for me. Anything else you wanted to add?
No, I thought we were gonna discuss Lakers' latest pickup, but I guess we'll save that for next pod.
Let's do it now. Let's do it.
Hot take. Sure?
Let's do it now. Yeah, let's do the hot take right now. Yeah, let's do the hot take. Who's your latest pickup?
DeAndre Jordan. Now,
oh my God.
To be honest, I don't like it that much. But if they're trying to replicate the Dwight and JaVale kind of duo, I get it with Dwight and DJ. But I have to like discuss this with you. You keep saying that the Nets get better with Paul Millsap, LaMarcus Aldridge. I disagree. I completely disagree. They have gotten worse. Oh, man. Where is their rim protection? Where is their rebounding? Playing this team, who is going to rebound? Who is going to protect the rim on the Nets? If you got Dwight, AD, or even DeAndre Jordan playing power forward and center. I'm just saying.
Past Eastern Conference playoffs, which player had the most success
guarding Giannis?
In slowing down Giannis?
Okay, that's one
thing. And held Giannis to some tough shots and poor shooting.
Okay, it was Blake Griffin, but let me ask you this.
Yes.
Who stopped Giannis in the post from scoring in overtime to get the Bucks over the Nets? Nobody. It was KD guarding Giannis in the post. Giannis bodied him, scored the 2 points, and then they ended up winning the game. Like that was like who's gonna guard anybody in the post? Who's gonna get any rebounds? Nobody.
Here's my take. Now you have Paul Millsap, he's no chump. He can still give you boards, he can still defend. You have LaMarcus Aldridge, who has this rejuvenation. And if you remember, before he retired, he was going off.
He was. I'm not gonna lie, he was.
Because remember, like people were going off on like Blake Griffin and LaMarcus, like, wow, they're on the Nets all of a sudden, they're like superstars again. And then on top of that, you have another year being wiser in Nick Claxton. Bruce Brown.
I don't think he's gonna play at this point.
Bruce Brown can guard 1 through 5.
It's probably gonna be a rotation of like LaMarcus, Paul Millsap, Blake, and Bruce Brown probably at the 4 or 5 doing their weird like small center lineup that they do.
I'm telling you, man.
Or even KD.
I'm telling you, you're sleeping on the Nets. You're sleeping on the Nets.
I am not. They're gonna get crushed by my team in the finals. We'll be all right.
For the Lakers, I'm not fazed by Wayne Ellington. Not in the slide. He hasn't been good since he played in Miami, honestly. That was the last time he was good.
Neither.
Be a bench member. Malik Monk, yeah, he had a great season last year. I'm not impressed. Ken Bazemore, like he played alongside Steph Curry. Like, I don't know. Like, it's
decent spot up shooter.
I'm not impressed with
him. Decent.
I'm still not impressed. Like, he hasn't been good for a minute. Who else do you guys have?
Kendrick Nunn.
Kendrick Nunn, a lot of people are sleeping on Kendrick Nunn. As much as I hate to see him leave Miami, I think he'll be your backup point guard.
Yeah, we got Rondo back.
He can even have minutes in the starting position. Honestly, Kendrick Nunn, like, he's that guy. He culture through and through.
Could be shooting guard.
He's gonna bring that heat culture to LA. That's what he's gonna do.
Bro, I think you're severely underestimating this team. Severely. Think about it. There's shooters around LeBron, there's experienced vets, and we have just size again. We have size again. That's how we won 2020's championship with size, vets, and defense. So
I feel like
chilling.
Dwight, he could be a problem. DeAndre, he's not going to be a problem. Marcus Gasol, he's not going to be a problem. Who's the other big man that you guys have now?
Anthony Davis. This guy was like top 5 in the league. Remember him?
Yeah, top 5 in being constantly injured throughout the whole year. So
hey, I'm
not feeling
by his rest. Him. He got his full rest. They're going to get a new
head of training. AD in the slightest.
Hey, what you mean, bro?
In the slightest. When you bring up AD, I'm just like, all right, yeah, if he could stay on the court, like, other than that, I got...
It was a compressed schedule. Man. It was a schedule. All right, that was for a lot of players.
Still,
but don't worry.
Like THT, I feel like he could be a problem. Kendrick Nunn could be a problem. Ken Bazemore, no. Wayne Ellington, no. Malik Monk, no. Rajon Rondo, no.
What? Rondo and AD
Russell
together.
Russell Westbrook.
Rondo and AD
Russell
together.
Westbrook.
Are you sure about that?
Westbrook is going to be a problem during the season, but come playoff time, no.
Melo, yo, LeBron and Melo at the 3 and 4.
Melo,
that's been pretty good.
I'll say he's gonna be a problem only because I like Melo and I want him to win a ring. But come on, man.
Wait. So are you saying that no one on the Nets is gonna be a problem, like injury wise or like just playing wise? Are you sure?
KD will be fine. Kyrie is going to disappear, but that's why the Nets picked up Patty Mills. Great pickup, by the way. Amazing pickup.
It is kind of good. I'm kind of worried about that, but James Harden, scary hours.
He's going to be a problem in the season, not so much the playoffs.
Yeah. So there we go.
Joe Harris. He's going to be a problem in the season, and he's going to carry that into the playoffs.
Hypothesis. Why are you doing this to yourself? What, Joe Harris?
That's my hypothesis. Yeah.
Did we not see him in game 7 in the second round? Are you sure?
I'm telling you, that's eaten him up every single day since then. And that's going to feed his hunger coming into this next season.
He did the whole series. Wasn't this what you did the whole series?
I'm telling you.
I'm telling you. What? Are you sure?
March. Yes. Yes. Right. Who else is on Brooklyn now?
We're going to see.
Blake will be fine. LaMarcus, he'll give you some stuff, night to night. Paul Millsap, he'll probably be like an easy, like 7 points, 9 rebounds type of guy.
I can't wait till the finals and guess who's on LeBron? Joe Harris. Oof. Good luck with that, bro. Good luck with that assignment. Good luck with that defensive assignment. Oh man.
I'm not saying like the Nets are gonna be the top like defensive team. But offensively, they're gonna be a force to be reckoned with.
KD on AD is like a paper on a tree trunk. Like you can't really guard that. You can't do that.
What are you talking about, bro? Like, AD's not even going to be able to stay on the court. He'll play like the first quarter, pull like a hammy. He's out for like two games.
We've got a new head of athletic training, whatever it's called, the new head trainer. We got a new one. We fired the old one. Got a new one. This person will be all right. They're gonna take care of AD.
We gotta do a podcast. We're gonna get Chris, our friend Chris Milholland, back on here.
No, he's gonna perpetuate the narrative that the Nets are the best team. He's gonna do that.
It'll be two on two. We gotta make it even. Two on two.
All right. Yeah. All right.
We'll set that up. We'll set that up.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Before we go, hot take. We both have Nets Lakers being in the finals.
Yeah.
Give me two teams, like one from the East, one from the West, other than Nets Lakers that are gonna be in the finals.
Bucks. Because it's clear cut. It's going to be Nets Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think that's going to be the last two. For the West, Lakers and I don't want to say Suns, but I think it's going to be Suns or Warriors. One of those two. I'll say Suns.
Okay, so if it's not going to be Nets Lakers Finals, I'm going to go Bucks Warriors.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, okay. I see it.
Warriors are looking scary with their young guys.
Now they have Klay back soon.
Klay.
Wiseman's back.
Draymond is an Olympic gold medalist.
True. True.
James Wiseman is actually going to have a training camp.
Yo, I saw a graphic, by the way, on IG. And like you know how like there's like masked Kyrie. There's like hoodie yellow, right? They put on
Headband
that list.
Klay?
No, game six Klay. They put on that list freaking double digit lead Steph Curry. Can you believe that? Can you believe that? What kind of persona is that?
I think they were making fun of Steph.
Because it's not clutch, definitely, but damn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Damn.
Unbelievable.
You see it.
Yeah. All right. So I think that wraps it up for today's show. I think it was a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So until next time, everybody stay safe, stay healthy, stay tuned for the next podcast.
This has been a Fuse Podcast original produced by yours truly, Nat, with music by Johnny C.